Hello, I'm Dr. Sagar Lonial from the Winship Cancer Institute of Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm going to spend the next few moments talking a little bit about management of relapsed and refractory multiple myeloma, given the new number of agents we have, as well as multiple options and choices at each different stage of care. Now, I think it's important to recognize that while we talk about great outcomes for patients with multiple myeloma, this is actually some hard data that was actually recently published in JCO by Dr. Joseph from our group, looking at outcomes from 1,000 newly diagnosed myeloma patients who all received RVD as part of their initial induction. And what I think is really quite striking is that for both standard risk and high risk patients, we're seeing some of the longest progression-free survivals and overall survivals of any group we've ever seen published with newly diagnosed myeloma. Now, this approach does in fact include the use of initial therapy with upfront autologous stem cell transplantation. But this is now the largest data set published to date with RVD as the initial induction therapy, autologous stem cell transplantation as consolidation, followed by risk-adapted maintenance. And this paper is now in press in JCO, and I think is a very important resource as it serves as a new benchmark for efficacy of treatments going forward. Now, unfortunately, as good as we think we are with initial therapy for myeloma, we know that there are patients who will relapse, and management of that relapse, again, is becoming a little bit more challenging because we have lots of different new agents to talk about. So we still have the older, quote-unquote, novel agents. These include things such as bortezomib, lenalidomide, carfilzomib, and pomalidomide. And particularly with carfilzomib, there are lots of different questions about the dose and schedule. And a patient who may be resistant to 20/27 or 20/36, given on a once or twice a week schedule, may not be resistant to 56 milligrams per meter squared, given on a twice a week schedule. So I think it's important when we think about the dose and schedule of carfilzomib to think about what a patient has previously seen. There also are newer novel agents such as ixazomib, panobinostat, elotuzumab, and daratumumab. And again, we're going to talk about how to incorporate those as well as many of our newer agents into the treatment approach for patients with myeloma. So as we begin to think about factors to consider when we talk about treatment selection, there really are three sets of categories that we think through. The first is disease-related factors, then treatment-related factors, and finally, patient-related factors. And as you can see from each of the bullets underneath those three columns, each of these things may have a variable impact on what a patient chooses to do in the context of relapsed and refractory myeloma. And particularly understanding that while we may make a decision in first relapse, that decision may be very different in second or third relapse. And while we may err on the side of convenience for earlier relapses, we may not necessarily have that option in later relapses. So putting all of those together really represents the best way to think through how to approach patients and how to sequence drugs in the context of relapsed and refractory myeloma. So let's start off talking about many of the trials that compared with lenalidomide and dexamethasone as the comparator arm. And what you see are four large randomized phase III trials here, two of them using proteasome inhibitors, two of them using antibodies as the new drug. And as you can see, each of these was either carfilzomib plus Lendex versus Lendex, Ixa-Lendex versus Lendex, Elo-Lendex versus Lendex, or Dara-Lendex versus Lendex. And one of the challenges in these Lendex comparator arms is that very few of the patients in this trial had prior lenalidomide. And this is really important because, as we know, most patients that we're taking care of have progressed in the context of lenalidomide maintenance or received lenalidomide as part of their initial therapy. So the treatment approach has changed despite the original design of many of these trials. Now, if you continue to look at this, what I think you'll see quite nicely is that the progression-free survival clearly is improved for triplets over doublets. That's not a surprise, and based on this data, we've now accepted and acknowledged that a triplet has become the standard of care for patients with newly diagnosed myeloma, where the Lendex control arm has lost in every single randomized trial we've done. Now, there's another set of phase III trials that use bortezomib dex as the control arm. And these, again, are triplets versus doublets, except the ENDEAVOR trial, where, again, as you'll see at the top, carfilzomib used as 56 milligrams per meter squared, given twice a week. This is a very effective combination, probably the highest dose of proteasome inhibition that can be delivered safely, given at that, again, 56 given twice a week, 3 weeks in a row with a 1 week break. Now, there are other combinations where the new drug is either Dara, Elo, Panobinostat, or again, compared with Carfilzomib. And again, what you see is very few patients have had prior Len in both of these trials. But again, what you see is that the triplets or the new drug combination at Carfilzomib at 56 clearly is better than the doublets of Bortezomib and Dexamethasone. So this again sets up the idea that whether you want to partner with an IMID, such as Len, or with a PI, such as Bortezomib or Carfilzomib, clearly triplets remain better than doublets across the board. But as I suggested before, one of the challenges in the modern environment of myeloma therapy is that Len-Dex is no longer considered an adequate control arm because most patients have been exposed to Len or are resistant to Len when they get to the setting of first relapse. And so the questions become, do we have a significant number of trials looking at either bortezomib or carfilzomib as control arms, or looking at pomalidomide as the control arm? And so let's talk about a couple of these trials as we go forward. So the first is the CANDOR trial, which was presented at ASH this past year, that looked at carfilzomib dex versus Dara carfilzomib dex. And what I think you clearly see is a higher overall response rate, higher progression-free survival, and better outcomes across the board for patients, including MRD negativity, for patients that receive the triplet of Car-Dara-Dex versus carfilzomib and Dex. And this again sets up the concept that carfilzomib-Dex becomes a good partner for an antibody-based approach going forward. Now, what about looking at pomalidomide as a control arm? Well, this is Dara-Pom-Dex in the initial phase 1 study that demonstrated pretty significant activity with Dara given at the typical dose and schedule in combination with Pom-Dex in a very heavily pretreated group of patients who'd received a median of 4 prior lines of therapy. And what again you see is median PFS of 9 months, median DOR of 21.5 months, and the median overall survival was 2+ years for a group of patients with refractory myeloma, median of 4 prior lines of therapy. Now, what I want to show you is a subset analysis from a paper that we published from our group, looking at a small number of patients who received Pom-Dara-Dex in first relapse. And the reason this is important is, as you can see, the median progression-free survival is over 40 months with a median follow-up of 41 months, and the median overall survival also not reached with a median follow-up of 41 months, suggesting that in the context of first relapse, when pomalidomide does become a reasonable treatment option, partnering with daratumumab may be a very effective strategy in managing relapsed and refractory myeloma. Now, most recently, we have a large randomized phase 3 of isatuximab in combination with Pom-Dex versus pomalidomide and dexamethasone. And this was a randomized phase 3 with a median of 2 prior lines of therapy. And as you can see in the Icaria trial, the PFS was significantly better, almost double, for the group that received isa-pom-dex compared to pomalidomide and dexamethasone. And this, again, gives us great caution or great comfort in the idea that you can use ESA, which is a different CD38 antibody, targets a different epitope than Dara, in combination with Pom-Dex in an earlier relapse setting. This is 2 prior lines of therapy, and that you can get sustained and durable responses, and that that triplet is clearly better than the doublet of pomalidomide and dexamethasone. Now, what about looking at elotuzumab in combination with Pom-Dex compared to Pom-Dex? This is another phase 3 trial, a randomized trial. And again, as you can see, the progression-free survival and overall survival favor the use of elo-Pom-Dex versus pomalidomide and Dex, suggesting again that in a Pom-sensitive patient population, immunotherapy such as isatuximab or elotuzumab offers significant benefit compared with pomalidomide and dexamethasone alone. Now, this is a different trial. This is the Optimism trial, which used bortezomib dex as the control arm. And in this randomized phase 3, the idea was to add pomalidomide to bortezomib dex. So it's PVD versus bortezomib dex, or VD. And again, as you can see, the triplet is superior to the doublet across the board, with a significant improvement in progression-free survival, overall response rate, and complete remission rate for bortezomib with pomalidomide and dex compared to bortezomib dex alone. And so now, as you can see, we have a whole series of additional trials that don't use Len-Dex as a control arm and offer us new potential opportunities and treatments that are clearly more effective than doublets for patients with relapsed and refractory myeloma. So what I'm showing you here is our approach, our algorithm at Emory in terms of management of patients with relapsed and refractory myeloma. Again, if a patient is 1114 positive, we take them down a different path, and I'm going to show you some of that data as we go forward. But more importantly, as you can see, DARA has become a standard approach for many of our patients, either in the slow or aggressive relapse category, depending upon whether or not they've received lenalidomide. If they have not, then we can use POM or other potential partners with DARA. If they have, then Len-DARA-DEX does become a reasonable option. And as you can see, there are other potential options. Most recently now, isatuximab, PVD, ELO plus pomalidomide and dexamethasone. Each of these are now popping up in the relapse setting. And going back and figuring out what is a patient sensitive to, what are they resistant to, and how can I best create a triplet that is most likely to induce responses becomes a major goal when we're trying to parse through what the next treatment approach for a patient with relapsed and refractory myeloma may be. Now again, just as I said early on in the induction therapy setting, as good as we think we are, we unfortunately still have patients who need additional options. And this is data presented by Dr. Nuka from our group a couple years ago, looking at the overall survival for patients refractory to daratumumab in the most recent era. And again, this does not mean DARA in the early treatment settings. This is typically using DARA in the relapsed and refractory setting. And what I think you can see is that for patients that have limited options with quadruplet or penta-refractory myeloma, the median overall survival is likely going to be on the order of less than a year. And in our data set, that was about 11 months. This suggests that we clearly need new treatment options for patients when they run out of available treatment options going forward. And as we go back to that initial slide that I showed you earlier about factors to consider for treatment selection, all of that goes out of the window when you have a patient with refractory myeloma where they've seen all of the big five. They've seen bortezomib, carfilzomib, Len, POM, DARA, ELO, and many others that are available as well. This is when the goals of therapy really are to achieve stable disease or better, and that stable disease is in fact well tolerated. So again, the goals of therapy change a little bit based on the availability of new treatment options as well as the performance status of patients when they get to this status in multiple myeloma. So what are some of the new approaches that we talk about in the context of late relapsed myeloma? Well, again, XPO1 becomes a target, MCL1 or BCL2 becomes a target, new IMIDs become targets, and finally, immune-targeted agents as well. These are all potential options in the context of refractory myeloma. So let's start off talking about XPO1 inhibitors. As you know, we're talking about an agent called selinexor, and this is data from the STORM trial that demonstrated that while the overall response rate was in the 20s, 26% objectively, you can see that a significant fraction of patients achieved stable disease or better, and that stable disease could in fact be durable in a subset of patients as well. And so again, taking the dictum that I mentioned earlier, stable disease, well tolerated, this can offer significant benefit for patients. And this is now being tested in combinations with bortezomib and dexamethasone, carfilzomib and dexamethasone, as well as pomalidomide and dexamethasone. And there are a number of phase 2 and phase 3 trials exploring selinexor, not just with dex, but with other available treatment options in myeloma. And we await many of those trials coming forward. Now, what about venetoclax in the context of multiple myeloma? Well, there's been a lot of data looking at venetoclax in myeloma, and most recently, many of you may have heard about the Bellini trial, where the trial was halted early by the FDA. And I want to make a couple of important points about that. The first is that venetoclax alone in 1114 and in combination with dexamethasone in 1114 translocated myeloma is clearly a safe and effective treatment. We saw that in phase 1 and in phase 2 studies. And it wasn't until the phase 3 trial that we began to evaluate venetoclax beyond the 1114 translocated patients that we began to run into some trouble. And so I want to talk a little bit about that because I think it's important that we recognize from the Bellini trial that patients actually who were 1114, whether they got bortezomib, venetoclax, dex, or bortezomib, dex, the use of venetoclax in the 11-14 subset clearly gained significant benefit. And that benefit was not associated with the survival issues we saw in the non-11-14 subset of patients. And so what I want to reassure you about is that the use of venetoclax dex in 11-14 patients is in fact safe and can be incredibly effective, clearly increases the fraction of MRD negative patients, increases the overall response rate, increases the progression-free survival, and does not have a negative impact on overall survival, as was demonstrated from the Bellini trial subset analysis. So again, think about venetoclax in the 11-14 subset of patients. Now, what about iberdomide? Iberdomide is the newest in the IMiD family of drugs. Iberdomide is more potent than pomalidomide, lenalidomide, or thalidomide, although it is a cereblon binding protein. It's also called a CELMoD now, so it's not considered an IMiD because its effects on cellular-mediated immunity are so potent and so strong, far more so than we've seen with either len, thal, or pom. And this is data from a phase 1, phase 2 study where we looked at iberdomide and dexamethasone in a median of 4 to 5 prior lines of therapy with myeloma. And what I think you really nicely see is an overall response rate of about 30% across the board. In fact, if you look at patients who are POM DARA refractory, still 30% response rate for iber plus dex. And this is really impressive, again, considering the fact that these are patients that have had 4 to 5 prior lines of therapy, and iber plus dex is oral. It's a very well-tolerated IMiD or CELMoD, and in fact does not appear to have neuropathy, does not appear to have some of the confusion that's associated with IMiDs. Its main side effect appears to be myelosuppression, and we hopefully will see this drug moving forward in phase 2 and phase 3 trials in the near future so that we can have additional treatment options for our patients going forward. Now, the last area I want to touch on is targeting BCMA. And the reason I want to talk about this is we have a number of different approaches to targeting BCMA that are in clinical trials. And probably the furthest along right now is belantamab mafodotin, or Belamaf. And this is an anti-BCMA antibody drug conjugate. So it's basically an antibody with chemotherapy hooked onto the back, much like Mylotarg, but with a different chemotherapy moiety. This is MMAF, not calicheamicin or MMAE, as you may have seen in other antibody drug conjugates. Based on this, actually, there was very interesting data in an early phase 1 study that suggested very high overall response rates and complete remissions in patients who received belantamab as part of salvage therapy for refractory myeloma. And based on that encouraging data, a phase 2 trial was generated, the DREAM-2 study, that was randomizing between two different doses of belamaf, either 2.5 mg per kg or 3.4 mg per kg. Now, I think it's important to recognize that when we talk about belamaf, the most common side effect we see is myelosuppression. Not a surprise, we're using a drug that is that has a chemotherapy moiety on it and is targeted to the bone marrow. But the second adverse event to be aware of is ocular toxicity. And this is pretty much noted as a corneal issue that is reversible with dose holding or dose modification and can allow patients to receive belamaf for a long period of time. Though this can be, you do need some experience in managing the corneal toxicity and partnership with your ophthalmologist colleagues as well. What you see in this phase 2 trial is an overall response rate of about 30 to 34% in both dose cohorts, 2.5 versus 3.4. It did appear that the 2.5 milligram per kilogram dose was a safer dose, and so that is likely the dose that's moving forward in larger randomized phase 3 trials. And there were, again, complications that are not unexpected for patients with relapsed and refractory myeloma. Now, other targets that use BCMA as a potential target include BB2121, the anti-BCMA CAR T-cell that was published in a phase 1 study by Dr. Raji in the New England Journal a little under a year ago now, and this has now been experienced in a phase 2 trial as well. And what I'm going to show you is data from the BB2121 phase 1 experience. As you can see, the overall response rate for this CAR T-cell was 85%. With about half the patients achieving CR or stringent CR. Those responses occurred relatively quickly, and in the group of patients that achieved or received the highest dose of the cell, you can see the median progression-free survival is about 11 months, And among patients who achieve MRD negativity, it's 17.7 months. So again, in a median of 6 to 7 prior lines of therapy, this response rate is really quite impressive, quite acceptable, and is among some of the better responses we've seen in a heavily relapsed and refractory myeloma. Now, one of the key pieces that differentiates targeting BCMA with a CAR T-cell compared to CD19 CAR T-cells is the fact that it looks like the safety profile is different for BCMA and myeloma than it is for CD19 and ALL or large cell lymphoma. And what I mean by that is the incidence of grade 3, grade 4, CRS, and neurotoxicity is significantly lower. And we've seen this across the board, not just with BB2121, but with many other CAR T cells targeting BCMA and myeloma as well. And as an example, this is the CARTITUDE 1 study that was presented at ASH this most recent year. This is using a version of LCAR, something that was tested by the Legend Group in China and was presented and appeared to have very impressive initial activity. This is the phase 1 study using basically the LCAR construct in a US-based trial with an overall response rate of 100% in 17 evaluable patients. And again, most of those patients achieved complete remission and a significant fraction achieved MRD negativity. Now, this is that same LCAR study that I mentioned earlier. And what I think you see again is that this was done in China. And what we know about this is that with longer follow-up, there clearly is a longer duration of remission than we've seen in other trials going forward. Now, the last of the BCMA-targeted approaches that I want to mention is CC93269, or 269 for short. And this is a BCMA bispecific T-cell engager. So this is a variation on the BiTE that we saw from Amgen previously. It's slightly different. It really is named a bispecific, not a BiTE, because the technology is slightly different. And as you can see, in the highest dose cohort of refractory myeloma, median of 6 prior lines of therapy, an 88.9% overall response rate in a small number, only 9 different patients. But that again suggests that this is clearly very active, clearly very effective, and can be tolerated relatively well with only a CRS, anemia, and neutropenia as the main toxicities that we saw. There were some complications with infections. That is not unknown or unsurprising given how heavily pretreated these patients are, and I think really speaks to the activity of targeting BCMA even in a heavily pretreated relapsed and refractory myeloma. So I think in summary, we've seen lots of different exciting new approaches, and I think it is important to think through how you're going to manage early relapse, how you're going to manage second and third relapse using the available approved drugs, and then how are you going to get patients to clinical trials, particularly BCMA-targeted approaches, venetoclax-targeted approaches, or selinexor-based approaches if they develop refractory myeloma. I think having new drugs such as iberdomide and other new targets down the road is certainly very exciting, and I think, at least in our experience, the reason that we think many of our patients do quite well, both in the short term and the long term, is the availability of clinical trials for those patients. So I would ask that if you're a physician, partner with your largest and nearest academic center. If you're a patient, make sure you're being seen at a myeloma center in concert with your local physician to make sure you've got access to the best potential treatment options and best potential long-term outcomes as well. So thank you very much for your attention, and hope you enjoyed this presentation.